Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are joined today by our super producers, Noel, nicknamed To Be Announced, Brown, and Dylan, BD, yeah. Fagan. Because we forgot, Scott, we forgot to give him a nickname in our previous episode.
Oh, we did, didn't we?
So I'm going to go with Dylan Red Market Fagan.
I like it.
Okay.
Good enough.
All right, we got square for that last one.
Well, we're caught up now.
We're caught up now.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we fall behind again at the end of this one. But there's lots of potential in this one.
Yeah, because speaking of catching up, this is the return of something we like to do every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. This one's a nuts and bolts episode. And sometimes we rely a little bit more on stories. Sometimes it's focused on listener mail. I think this one's got just a little bit of both. I mean, not a lot of listener mail in this one. I've been trying to answer quite a bit of listener mail over the last couple months. But
I see you. I want to say that I'm sorry I haven't helped.
No, you have helped. You help all the time with stuff like
that. I mean, like, I will occasionally write to someone in a one-word reply if I think something's super cool.
Well, and I'm not talking so much with that with the replies, but I'm saying I will often come to you in the office and say, hey, what do you think of this? Or did we forget to include that? Or, you know, we have discussions about what they write in about, and then I reply with the message comes from me. I'm the mouthpiece, I guess, but you're in on it.
Oh, I'm like a puppet master? I'm the power behind the email throw?
I think you are, yeah.
That's
like
really cool,
the
man.
The power behind the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, technically speaking, on almost every level, that's our super producer team. But I appreciate it. I've got some listener mail, too, but we also have some stories and maybe some topical things.
Yeah, there's a few things, like some interesting things that have happened recently that I want to cover, and I'm going to save one. I've got one put off to the side here. I'm touching it right now. It's on the side here.
Okay.
Tapping it. It's going to be a surprise, I think, for you and I think for most of our listeners, if not all of our listeners.
So listen along. We're going to be hitting several topics here. And Scott, if I may, I would like to kick off the first thing.
Now, please begin.
All right. Thank you. So recently, your commute changed in a very unenviable, uncool way.
Yeah.
This wasn't the thing you were saving, was it?
No. That's
okay.
Not it.
So as you may have heard, ladies and gentlemen, in our neck of the woods here in Atlanta, Georgia, gosh, how many days ago was it?
This was on Thursday of last week, so let's call it 4 days.
Okay, so on Thursday of the previous week from which we record this now, a part of a very important interstate here in the city, within the city limits, collapsed.
Yeah.
Like it looked as though someone had cut a piece of sheet cake out of, like a flat piece of sheet cake out of a pan.
Yeah, it's not a jagged break on this thing. It's a very distinct, like, here's, you know, right at the pillar and right at the pillar on the other side. The result of this, and it was a fire, by the way, that brought this thing down. It's a long, sustained fire underneath the bridge that caused this to happen. It caused the steel and the concrete and everything to... I've read a little bit about the science behind why this happened.
Sure.
Steel-reinforced concrete. Concrete can hold higher temperature than steel can, and eventually when it gets to a certain point temperature-wise, it's almost as if the steel within there doesn't even exist anymore. It's like it's like butter. It's like soft butter.
And also, some officials or city groups were storing a bunch of construction material under there in a way that was against code.
Yeah, some type of plastic piping or something. And that was fueling this fire for a considerable amount of time. On Friday, it was a Thursday night, but this fire was just belching this black smoke everywhere. And the flames were above the surface. It's an elevated bridge, of course, above another road below it. Mm-hmm. And the flames were so high they were going around the bridge sides. Well, people are still driving over it at some point early on before they got it blocked off. Unbelievable. There's video. There's audio of this happening. Mm. It's crazy.
This
was
at the tail end of Atlanta's rush hour.
Yeah.
And somehow, as far as we know, No one was injured.
Yeah, no one injured or killed.
Which is amazing and speaks very highly to the local emergency responders.
Yeah, and it's incredible that they were not underneath that bridge fighting that fire when it came down. I think they were smart enough to get out. They knew, or they could read the signs of what was happening and evacuated. But it was a crazy commute home. That's the way I go to and from work every day.
Mm-hmm.
And already, sometimes, I think I've mentioned this probably too many times, but my commute is anywhere from an hour and a half to 2.5 hours. Depends on the traffic and condition, you know, weather,
sure,
conditions, et cetera.
And if you have to pull over to give someone the business.
Yeah, CPR, whatever, you know.
smash in a window.
Yeah, whatever I have to do, right? I mean, so, but I take that bridge, that highway system right there, I take that home, to and from work, I guess. And mm-hmm. So I'm on there twice a day. 700 feet of this bridge is going to have to come down and be reconstructed. It's going to take several months. 200,000 cars a day travel over that. I've seen numbers a little higher, like 250,000 cars a day make their way across that bridge. So that means that all of the ancillary roads, the smaller roads off to the side, the highway, there's three yeah. other highways, but the smaller roads are what's going to really take the brunt of this. So all those people are going to have to find a new route to work or to school or whatever, home, for months and months, they say. It's not a quick fix. It's not something you can just drop in and it's repaired. This is going to take a long, long time. And already, we're only 4 days into this.
Yeah.
And right now, it's got this added complication that it's spring break here in the state, at least anyways, of this region. So a couple of things. You know, a lot of people are trying to get through Atlanta, and you need that's a critical part of the Atlanta highway system. But also, it's giving us, like, you know, reduced rush hour traffic in the morning and the evenings because, you know, schools aren't in.
Right.
People are taking the week off, you know, traveling down south or whatever. So we don't really have an idea of what it's going to be like next Monday when everybody's trying to get to school and work. It's going to be a lot different. That's the true test of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a crazy scenario. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of anything like this ever happening before.
Yeah.
I mean, they take down bridges intentionally. Mm-hmm. You know, they reroute people. But this was like, this happened over the span of about 45 minutes. And it just left a really strange feeling around here for this whole weekend. And I know people are still trying to figure things out.
And that's another thing that's a really important point. Although we are not used to this, is not the kind of thing people expect, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do know that statistically, things like this are bound to happen because the public infrastructure, and roads are, for the most part of public infrastructure at some level, the public infrastructure in many regions and in many states here is in dire need of assistance.
Yeah,
you know?
And don't get me wrong. I mean, I know bridges come down in major cities.
Of course.
But
yeah.
this city is so – we talk about this all the time in this podcast. You know, I think our audience knows that it's a crowded, crowded city already.
Yeah.
And this is just going to amplify everything. So, you know, what's going to happen? Because this is a 7 million – you know, the population in Atlanta is around 7 million right now. Crazy number of people trying to get into and out of the city every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's really going to be interesting to see what happens. And not only that, this is like a this is a funnel point, I guess, for everybody from, you know, the entire, what would you call it, I guess, the Eastern Seaboard.
Uh-huh.
Comes through this city in order to get down to Florida or down to maybe even down to Alabama or Louisiana, places like that. You know, you pass through Atlanta at some point. So just an interesting situation. I know it's very local for us, but it's interesting to see the way that they're going to handle this, or it will be interesting to see what happens.
You know, Scott, it makes me wonder, this might be the last time we see each other in person, man. We might just
right.
have to record online.
Maybe. Yeah, I might have to set up a home studio or something.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting idea.
You might have to travel the wilds of Atlanta on like a camel or something to make a trek into town.
Maybe I get a pilot's license and I could land on the roof here.
That is so cool. Yeah, the roof's big enough.
Sure.
You could build your own helicopter. Remember we talked about that?
Oh, that crazy guy. Yeah, I've seen him around recently. Again,
is he
by
still
the way.
Around?
He's still alive.
Which, has it wrecked that thing?
No,
yet?
But similar maneuvers were happening. You know, the circling over an intersection thing. Which
why? Is he filming something?
I don't know what that guy is doing. It's a homemade helicopter.
Is he close enough to hear you if you shout?
You know what? No, because the contraption
the
that
rotors.
He's built
yeah.
is so loud. And it's a crazy device. This thing is bizarre to see. But, he's still behaving in the same manner with his homemade helicopter over our city, which is weird.
That is weird.
Yeah, yeah, weird. He's really putting some people in peril, I think, on the ground.
I do have one point about this before we move on.
Yeah.
So Beijing retrofitted a bridge. Have you seen this video? Hmm. Beijing retrofitted a bridge in 43 hours.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And they brought it. Okay, so what they did is they took apart the old structures, and that took a few hours. Then they brought an entire piece of concrete to bridge the gap and paved it over. And to build the bridge, they used over 1,300 tons of new surfacing material, and that saved months of commotion and traffic woes. They called it a new integrated replacement method.
43 hours. That's
it. Yeah, I'm going to send the video to you, and I'm also going to post it on Twitter so that anybody's interested can check this out.
That is impressive, because we're talking about months and months here in this situation.
Oh, yeah.
So,
we're talking about next year.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right. Well, you want to move on to something else now?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go through these a little bit faster. Oh, by the way, you know, something else that happened this week. It's another news item. Well, actually, this happened right at the very end of March. So, yeah, maybe a couple weeks ago. This has to do with the Monster Jam World Finals Freestyle Championship, and this is held in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Uh-huh.
A driver did a planned front flip, and it was planned. It wasn't something that just happened by accident, because it has the appearance that maybe it just happened by accident. But
did he
land it. Yes, he did, and it was the crowd went crazy. I mean, you could see this online, and I think it was Josh Baker that sent this to us on Facebook that I first was alerted to this, and. It's pretty remarkable. The driver is a guy by the name of Lee O'Donnell, and the truck is the VP Racing Fuel's Mad Scientist truck. So it looks kind of – well, they all look kind of cool. You know, they've got the fiberglass body work and all that stuff. But what a cool thing. So they have this freestyle championship part of the Monster Jam that, you know, allows them to – I don't know if it's 3 minutes or what the time frame is really, but it allows them to just go out and kind of do everything that they want on the on the open field there. It's kind of like – it's like playtime for monster trucks, right? Mm. That's maybe the best way,
to say it.
So they do all kinds of crazy stuff, right? Like they're doing, of course, doing a lot of backflips and jumps and, you know, ending up on one wheel and riding across the floor. It's amazing to watch, really. It's incredible. But this, of course, put him right to the top of the leaderboard and ended up winning the event for that night. But, this is really cool. So you need to watch this in order to get an appreciation of what's going on. And technically, this is not the first ever flip that ever happened. There's one that was set up to happen back in 2015 with a special ramp and everything, and Guinness was there to record it as the first ever, and it actually happened, but due to a technicality, it wasn't counted as the first front flip, because I think there was something like he landed on the rear wheels, but the guy ended up on all four wheels. That's like making the jump, or making the flip. But for whatever technicality reason that, you know, the Guinness people didn't accept it as the first ever flip. But again, that's more of a stage thing. This was done kind of by surprise. You know, the crowd wasn't expecting it to happen, when it did. But again, you just have to see it in order to believe it. Again, that's Lee O'Donnell in the Mad Scientist, VP Fuels monster truck. Yeah, check it out. And it's one of those things that you want to watch in slow motion, maybe even a couple of times, just to kind of grasp what's going on there. But it's really remarkable. And he lived.
Oh, good. That's always good.
Well, you know, when you look at it, you think, like, oh, that's a lot of punishment for that driver.
It would be great to get inside one of those things.
Oh, it sure would.
I have a very brief listener mail.
Okay.
Let's hear it. I think you're really going to enjoy this one.
Oh, I hope so.
Rob F. writes to us on Twitter to say, "Hey, Car Stuff, watched your Amazon video for Rally North America and loved it."
Oh, very good.
Wait for it.
Oh, no.
"Totally not swagger jacking. We were just lost."
Oh, I know exactly who this is. Hey, let me come clean here. If you're carefully listening to that, I think I said, like, hey, that guy's pretty cool, actually. I remember talking to this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, during the rally. There was no animosity.
We talked to Rob, of course.
Yeah, that's right. There was no bad blood there. We were just having fun for the video. But I know exactly who this is.
It was a great time. If you watch the video, we're in that video, we are pretty happy overall. that we saw another rally car. Because every time we saw another rally car, we're like, all right, can't be that wrong.
Yeah, well, we knew Rob was on the right track, so you know we were on the right track, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It was a fun time, and that video is I don't know. It's something that I'm really proud of that video. Really, I mean, I think it turned out really well, and we had such fun doing that rally. I think that comes across in the it was frustrating at times, sure, and I think that comes across in the video as well. But Rob, we weren't in any way angry with you. Don't take it that way. It's just having a little fun with the edit, I guess.
Yeah, and I think at some point our editing team fell in love with the phrase swagger jacket.
Yeah, I think they did. And I'm so glad that if you watch the video at the end where we both, I think it was you and I, were saying like how cool Rob is actually.
Yeah. Well, everybody at the rally was really cool with us. You can check that video out for free on Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, they'll show it to you without commercials. But if you go for free at the link you can find on our Twitter, our Facebook, everywhere.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It's the internet is lousy with this thing now.
Yeah.
You can watch it with some brief commercials. But do weigh in if you're feeling charitable, you know, feel free to give us a rating on Amazon or tell your friends or share the link. Every time you do one of those three things, our daily beatings here at work are 3 minutes shorter.
That's fair. Yeah, so be kind, please.
Be kind.
Yeah, that's right. I thought you were going to say something like, every time you do that, a rally car gets a decal. Something like that.
Whoa.
You know, like an angel gets its wings, that kind of thing. Do I need to explain this?
Yeah.
Okay. A rally car. How about a rally car?
Walk us through it.
No, I'm done. I'm done with it. We'll just leave it at that. But you know what? Speaking of commercials, maybe we should take a moment for a short break of our own.
Agreed. And we're back. You mentioned earlier at the top that we should step through things quickly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry it took so long with the I-85 collapse. I'm just very interested in what you have to think, ladies and gentlemen.
And dramatic video. So check it out.
Yes.
and realize like what we were up against there last Thursday in traffic in Atlanta, which is already hell.
Cool.
All right. So I've got one thing that I want to mention. Is I guess maybe it's a stuff Scott sees. All right, so here's what I saw the other day, and I had to look carefully at this to understand what was going on, but from a long way away, I saw a big jet, and I saw a smaller vehicle flying right next to it. And I thought, well, okay, this is a military escort of some, maybe it's a, who knows, maybe it's Air Force One, maybe it's, the vice president coming into town or something like
that.
Didn't know what was going on. So I watched it for a while, and as I got closer and closer, I realized that's a passenger jet. It was just, you know, like one that, I don't know, maybe Delta or somebody would own, right? A jet like that. And the vehicle that's flying near it wasn't a military jet. It wasn't an escort. It was just like a regular prop plane, a small prop plane. And I thought, well, that's weird. What am I seeing here? Why would they be doing that? And then it kind of dawned on me. You know how when you're, you know, on a plane and you're watching their safety videos and all that, and you see kind of like the beauty shots, the B-roll of a plane or jet in the air? That's probably what they were doing. If not testing, they might have been, you know, filming something outside, you know, while they were testing, or a test flight of some kind. But my initial thought was that this is a, again, like a military escort of some kind, but it wasn't. And the possibility that they're doing like a photo shoot or, you know, just kind of beauty B-roll type shots, I guess, for that airline, that had to have been what it was. I would assume that's what it was anyways. I mean, it just had that feel and that look. But I've never seen that really from the ground anyways or from anywhere really.
They could have been filming for a movie.
You know what? It could have been because we have a huge movie industry down here.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility. We've got aircraft manufacturers that are down here. We've got military bases that are down here. Maybe there's something going on with that. Anyways, I just thought it was strange. I don't know if it was testing and observation or if it was, again, just something that's more PR focused.
Did you hear what the common portmanteau is now?
No.
Yollywood.
Yollywood.
Like the word y'all plus Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Yollywood. Okay, I got it. I wonder if we're going to get a sign that says that up in the mountains somewhere.
Super impressed with that, Scott.
Yeah.
Very well. Wow. Is it not? Is that pun not up to your?
No, I'm impressed. That's what if we get that up in the hills somewhere, like, you know, 50-foot letters, Yollywood.
All about it. Yeah. You know? Have the local teens go there to raise some heck.
You know, I think I just read something about the Hollywood sign that said that it wasn't necessarily a nod to Hollywood, like the industry, you know, like the film industry. I think it was something that was erected by a guy that was trying to sell real estate up in the Hollywood Hills at the time. And he wanted to draw attention to that area or to himself. I don't remember exactly the story, but again, it was like a real estate developer that came up with that idea. Kind of promote the idea that, you know, you can live up in this area. It's remote at this time, but it's possible.
Don't you want to live by a sign? Yeah. Signs were a very big deal back then.
Well, I mean, it was an attention grabber. I mean, no one had ever seen anything like that.
For sure. Yeah. And it became iconic. Maybe that's the key, man. Maybe you just have to create your own prestige.
It could be.
Maybe you should get a big sign and a hill near you that just says Scott.
I don't think I'll be doing that.
But you'll have the back of, like, every other Scott that sees it will have your back.
Oh, yeah. So what's that market? Like, maybe a half of 1% of everywhere, the whole world? I wonder how many people are named Scott in the world.
I just feel like this is a very can't-do attitude. Let's get right out.
Yeah, I'm kind of shooting down your ideas there. But, what if there's Ben in lights somewhere around town here?
All about it.
Is that right?
Yeah. And yeah. Also, Ben is a series of letters that occurs in a lot of things. So, you know, do I feel a little bit of unnecessary smugness when I drive by a Bennigan's? You betcha. I even hold, like, my hand over. I close one eye and hold my hand over it so I just see the bin part.
Oh, yeah. It's nothing a little bit psychotic about that. Hey, you know what? Now I'm a little bit upset that I have to go to Bennigan's today. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
I got that thought put in my head.
Hey, send me a picture. I hear they've got a deal on apps. This podcast is, by the way, not brought to you by Bennigan's.
Hey, you know what? I've got another
moving on.
Little bit of, I don't know if you call it listener mail, but it's from Facebook. I guess it's listener mail, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's about a podcast episode that we had, and it's from a guy named, his name's right out there on our page, so I'll just say it. It's Bill Ness. And Bill wrote in and said, this is regarding our Borg Ward episode. So he says, today, I heard your show on the Borg Ward, which I'd never heard of before today, which we hadn't really heard of until we started researching it, really.
Right.
But he says, just out of coincidence, Restoration Garages had an episode on the Velocity Channel that was about a 1959 Isabella Coupe on the very same day that our podcast released.
Wow.
So isn't that strange? What a weird thing. And
yeah.
He said, you know, that reminded me of, you know, your Bader Meinhof phenomena thing that you had mentioned all the time. That happens, but it happened right then, like the very same. It was instant. I think we even talked about that during that episode, right?
Yeah, we did.
So there it is. Instant results for Bill. Thanks for writing in, Bill. I had no idea that was going on air. That was just a complete coincidence on our part. Didn't
have
it planned.
That's super cool. Or was it? It was. It was. It totally was.
And going back to another piece of listener mail, this is an email that we received. I'm going to read a little bit more of this because it's pretty interesting. First of all, it's a correction. It comes from a guy named from Gary G, and Gary G is listening to us in Germany. And he has a correction on our episode that was about you remember the one that was about cars and trucks that you'll still crave 10 years from now?
Yes.
I think that was back in late February of this year that we recorded that episode. And he says, I'll just read his note here. Hi, Ben and Scott. I've been a longtime listener and usually really enjoy most of the topics you bring up. Especially with some of the historically oriented episodes on famous cars, racing, people, things like that. Like Smokey Eunuch, that was one of his favorite things. Well, thanks, by the way, Gary. We appreciate that. But he says, being a GM and muscle car fan with something of a history, he mentions over the last 16 years he's had a 98 Camaro with a V6, a 79 Camaro with a V8, a Formula Firehawk from 2000, and he currently has a 99 Trans Am. A Firehawk version.
Nice.
So he's seen a lot of these General Motors products, and he has a particular interest in the F-body stuff, you know, the Camaro and the Firebird and, you know, all that other stuff that goes along with it. So he liked the episode, but he said we did get a couple of things wrong. And one thing that he mentions, and I checked this out, he's right. He says you got the motor wrong on the Corvette Grand Sport. It has the LT1 motor, not the LT4 motor. The LT4 is the supercharged engine that's used in the Camaro ZL1 and the Corvette Z06. While all the lower models, and that's in parentheses, or in quotes rather, the lower models of both V8 Camaro and the Corvette use the LT1 motor. So he's right. I mean, I listened to it again, but the thing is, I look back at the article that we were following along with, and I think it was, I don't know if it was Autoblog or who it was that had written that, but they had inadvertently put in there that the LT4 was the motor of choice in the Grand Sport. So I went to the Chevy site and verified that it is the LT1 that comes in the Grand Sport.
Thank you for the correction, Gary.
Yeah, very nice. Very good catch. Good catch. We appreciate it. And another interesting little note about that engine, or about what General Motors is doing now, because we've talked before about how they'll put the same engine in different products and they'll downgrade it. They'll say, well, it's the same engine that's in the Camaro and the Corvette, but the Corvette for some reason has 5 horsepower more. You know, that's kind of like they're playing this this game where you know, that's like the top dog, right? And the other one gets rated a little bit less, and it's simply on paper. It's not changed in any way. So that he says that they're not really doing that anymore. So he says, you know, contrary to earlier models like the LS1 era, you know, like 97 and up, GM has opted to not artificially reduce the horsepower output of the motor or underrate it in the Camaro. So the horsepower rating is identical for both cars. Of course, with the Vette's lower curb weight, the performance is slightly better. So I understand that. But it's interesting they're not doing that, underrating, I guess, maybe.
Right, yeah.
So interesting there. And he also mentions this. Now, this is the last thing I'll mention from his email here, but he says, as for the transmission, I get the feeling that neither of you have driven the A8 or the A10. That means the automatic 8-speed or automatic 10-speed. I have driven an 8-speed. It's in my wife's vehicle, but not the General Motors version of that. I'll have to admit that I haven't driven the General Motors version of that. He says, well, I personally do prefer the manual transmission. Oh, by the way, he's got a Camaro 50 that's on the way to him. He's ordered it already. He says that GM does have a pretty decent automatic transmission in both the A8 and the new A10. A test drive of an A8-equipped 2017 SS did not, he did not notice much, if any, gear hunting in that test drive. Now, he hasn't driven the A10 and doesn't know how that's going to be, but, you know, whether or not you're even in automatic mode, you know, there's different modes you can put this in. You know, you can put it in sport or track or, you know, various other modes. But in those modes, it's going to be more performance-oriented and quicker shifting, of course. But if you're in a 10-speed version of that and, you know, let's say the top three are more like overdrive gearing, you know, so that, you know, it might hunt around a little bit, but it's supposed to be less noticeable. Ooh. But again, we don't have any experience in the GM 8 or 10-speed automatics. You're right. To be fair, I've only driven the Chrysler version of that, or Jeep version. So, and other vehicles, I guess. We've done some test driving stuff recently with vehicles that had pretty fancy automatic transmissions, and you can feel some of that gear hunting happening, and I can feel it in my own car, which is a 6-speed automatic from Volkswagen, and it just seems like we discussed it in that episode, that it just seems like it's constantly searching for a better gear, constantly.
Yeah, that's
no need to over describe it here.
That's,
I guess,
the feedback.
Yeah. It was nice. Well, thanks for the note, Gary. I appreciate it. And, you know, we're always open to corrections, and I'll look into them, and, you know, if it's something valid, sure, we'll read it on air.
As always, yeah, you're the most important part of the show. Thank you for keeping us honest. The best suggestions for upcoming episodes come from you. Speaking of you, not the general you, but you, Michael A. specifically, you wrote to us via email and said, could you do a podcast on the origins of automobile badging? What was the first badge? Where did the bow tie come from? How did Mercedes come up with their symbol? If you look at older cars, you don't see a badge. You see the company name. How do car companies make the transition? Thanks, Mike. Here's the thing, Mike. Scott and I have actually looked into the history of some of this stuff, and it is such a rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
You would be very surprised at how quickly those very clear and articulate questions, which we have also asked, become murky.
You know, throughout the years as we've done this podcast, we've tried to focus in on, you know, what makes those badges unique or what they stand for as we talk about certain makes or marks or, you know, specific models even, you know, with numbering and, you know, the new numbering and lettering that they do, the kind of that alphabet soup version of what a car is named now. We've talked about all that, and we have talked about the badges, you know, like what they symbolize. So, like, you know, Mercedes with the, you know, land, sea, and air, you know, for the 3 points of the star, that type of thing. That comes up during the episode, but we haven't compiled it all into one concise episode. You know, I haven't. It's not down to one badging episode. And again, you're right, Ben. That's a huge rabbit hole because there are thousands of these.
We usually find, as you said, Scott, we usually find the best information about badging when really digging into the story of a specific car manufacturer. Mm-hmm. I would love to have a comprehensive badging episode. It's just going to take some elbow grease on our part.
Yeah, some serious digging.
Yeah,
really
for
would.
Sure.
Yeah, but it would be a good idea. So that's a fun one, and maybe we can get to that one in the future. Who knows?
Yeah,
I hope so. Hey, you know what? Maybe we should take another break for a word from our sponsor right here.
Hey, that was a great call, Scott. You know, you've been killing it with this. Just a little peek behind the curtain here. Oftentimes, we know that we want to take a break for a sponsor, but I will get a carry away, or, you know, sometimes it'll be either of us will get carry away about something that we find really fascinating, and then our poor editors, Dylan, whom we still owe a nickname to, will come back and wonder where he's supposed to do it.
I know. Big trouble when that happens, you know? He puts the smack down on us, really.
Yeah, I was thinking of a nickname over the commercial break. Would you like to hear it?
Was it SmackDown?
No, but that's great.
All right, what was it?
Dylan Steely Dan Fagan.
Oh, I like it. Steely Dan, yeah.
Yeah,
he's actually Steely Dan.
He's a big Steely Dan fan.
Is he?
I think so.
I have no idea. Well, that would explain the jean jacket that he wears. You know, Steely Dan embroidered across the back.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't know what that was for, yeah. But now I get it.
And those four finger rings that he's always for that say Steely Dan.
Yeah, sure. Oh man. Okay. All right. I think we've taken that one far enough. Let's get back into listener mail. How about listener mail? I've got a good one here.
All right, yeah. All right,
this comes from a long-time listener, someone that we've been writing back and forth with for many, many years, several years. His name is Richard Rosso, and Richard writes in. Hey, well, Richard, just to remind you a little bit here, Ben, of who this is. I'm sure you remember. He's a guy that was originally, I think he was in the tire business, if I remember correctly, and then he became a limo driver. He's a chauffeur. So
yeah.
He sends us photos from out west all the time. He's constantly all over the place out there, in Vegas or Reno or, on the west coast, the far extreme west coast. He's driving kind of crazy, limousines, buses sometimes, or just stretch limos that are made, out of hot rods, all kinds of interesting things. So
yeah.
Richard's an interesting guy. I like writing back and forth with him. But he writes in this note, and I think, you'll get the gist of this, that he's writing about the old days. Richard's not a youngster. He's an older guy, but he writes in kind of like reminiscing about the old days in this email.
Yeah.
So there's a few things here, and some of this I agree with. Some of this I may argue back just a little bit, and I'll tell you why. It's not to be mean or anything, but I mean, I think that there are some kids that still can appreciate some of the stuff that he's talking about here. So he starts out with saying, kids will never know the joy of driving. I don't know about that, but I see where he's going here, because he said, when I was a kid, there was no power steering, no power brakes. We had crank windows, and I think the optional extras were things like heaters and radios and outside mirrors. He says, I think in some cars, only the left one was available. So I'm not even sure if backup lights were an option or not available, but I think they always were. We always had reverse lights, at least memorable recent history anyways. It says power windows are not available. Air conditioners were not available. There was a clock, maybe. And sometimes he says, of course, at a point there weren't even automatic transmissions. They weren't even invented at this point. So I maybe give you an insight into Richard's age here. But he says when clocks did become available, mine never worked. And he says his father never had a radio because it would drain the battery. And later he wouldn't have electric windows because it was one more thing to go wrong in the car. And I totally understand that. That's something we've said about some of these crazier options, too. So, even way back then, Richard's dad was concerned about, just power windows going wrong. So why not, just stick with the hand cranks? They work, right? And he talks about a lot of things here. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but he talks about, double clutching and here's a good one. Pumping the accelerator to get gas in the carburetor and then having to pull the choke all the way out and hoping you don't flood the car. He says, I don't even think you can flood a car nowadays. And he's right. You can't flood a fuel-injected engine, like you could the old carbureted ones with the manual choke inside. Right. So I totally get that. I understand. He's talking about, like, vacuum-powered windshield wipers and, oh, cup holders. That's a funny one. Cup holders. So they weren't even invented yet. If you wanted to have a drink in the car, you either had to put it between your own legs while you're driving, or you had to hold, you know, hand it to your friend to hold while you're driving.
Which either way is kind of a trust fall.
Yeah, I guess so. But it was funny. I mean, this whole thing is funny. He's talking about starters on the floor and dimmer switches on the floor and horn rings. Anyways, it's a funny list here. He's got two or three pages of this stuff. So really good memories of back during the old days. But then he gets to the end here, and this is where there's a little bit of a twist. Now, Richard writes in often, and he tells me that his brother is a Tesla owner, and he's been to the Tesla factory, and he has taken the tour of the Tesla factory, I think maybe even a couple of times. But he says, I just bought a car, and I don't think it's a Tesla, but maybe. He says, I just bought a car that is not only smarter than me and could tell where I wanted it to take me, but will also give me turn-by-turn instructions while I'm going there. I can set cruise control, and the car will not let me get too close to the car in front of me. I don't have air conditioning or a heater as much as I have a climate control system with, you know, the multi-zones and all that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But he says, if I have an accident, the car is going to call for help for me. I don't even have to do that. And then he ends with this. I don't think the good old days were really the good old days at all. So, like, now that he's got all this new technology, like, he started out by saying kids won't know the joy of driving and all the, you know, the difficult stuff that you had to do. But then he ends with, I don't think the good old days were really the good old days at all, because he's on board with the modern technology. So it's a little bit of a contradiction, but I get what Richard's saying. I totally understand it. He says, I just wanted to think about the old days. And, you know, it's not that, that they were, any way better, really. It's just that maybe he's seeing the light, I guess, that, you know, technology helps in a lot of ways.
Technology absolutely does. You know, it's weird. I've been having some conversations with people about nostalgia.
Yeah.
And looking into some of the research about nostalgia, and one thing that's fascinating about it is we tend to remember more our emotional state or the feeling that we had, mm-hmm. rather than the stuff that wasn't great about it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of bad things that go along with that, but you only pick and choose what you want to remember from that era.
Memory's a crazy thing.
So nostalgia is incredibly powerful. I mean, it wants you, it draws you back in, but then at the same time you forget everything else around it that happened, around the good memories that you have that were, you know, the bad things. And sometimes, I mean, it can bring people to tears, nostalgia can. It really can. If you sit and think about, you know, the way things used to be and you want them to be that way, you can get a little choked up, but then you realize, like, well, maybe it wasn't all that great because I didn't have this and that I do now. Or whatever the case may be. But Richard, we thank you for writing in again. We appreciate it and, hope this keeps your name out there on the internet and gets you the street cred that you were looking for, because he mentioned that he wants the street cred that us mentioning him on our podcast provides him.
This is a shout out to you, sir. Shout out to Richard.
So he's world famous again.
Yes. If you're hanging out with your buddies right now, we'll speak on your behalf. Richard's a pretty big deal, you guys.
Absolutely.
So act accordingly.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, thank you. We've got another email here, okay. Listener mail, from Michael N. And Michael N., this email is titled, The Cincinnati Exit.
Oh, okay.
Michael N. writes to us with an email titled, Cincinnati Exit. Dear Ben and Scott, first off, thanks for the consistently great shows. I really enjoyed your first Nuts and Bolts episode of 2017. Glad you say that, man, because you're on this one.
Here we are again.
Here we are again. I especially enjoy hearing about the regional things people do. I wanted to offer an addition to your list. I refer to it as the Cincinnati Exit. Sorry, I don't have a clever alliteration for it, as I came up with the name a few years ago. When doing highway driving anywhere within 30 or so miles of Cincinnati, most cars seem to exit the highway from the farthest left lane possible at as high of a speed as possible. Take a second to process that. It does not make sense. I have no idea why so many people drive this way. It's horrifically dangerous, causes traffic to be significantly worse than it should be, but it also seems to be the norm. It's as though everybody is in an endless race against every other car on the road. I live about 30 miles north of the city, and on a typical commute from work downtown to my home, I'll witness no less than 2 cars do this per exit.
Whoa.
That's not a typo. I really do mean, he's writing this, I really do mean 2 cars per exit.
Per exit? That's, well, that really amps it up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
And he also says, I just wrapped up the 10 cars and trucks you'll still crave in 10 years episode. It was mentioned that the list was restricted to cars and trucks under 100K because anything over that mark is arguably a work of art. The 2017 Corvette Grand Sport is, beyond any shadow of a doubt, a work of art for considerably less than 100K. It might be the most beautiful car ever made. Oof, you just started some fights there, Michael. That being said, it was disappointing to not hear the 2017 Mazda Miata RF on the list. If you have a pulse, this thing should be your bag of carrots. My local Mazda dealer has one in their showroom right now. I took it for a test drive, fell in love. Handling is unparalleled. It performs much stronger than its specs suggest. The 6-speed manual is sublime. Let's pretend the automatic doesn't exist, he says. Mm-hmm. All for just over 30K. Should I ever find myself with 30K burning a hole in my pocket, not holding my breath, there is no question that it would go toward picking up a Miata RF. Hmm. Thanks, Mike.
Nice pick. And also, I like that he brought back bag of carrots.
I do, yeah. I like that, too. I was thinking about this, Mike, and I don't want to get your tradition. First off, the Cincinnati exit sounds pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it sounds horrific.
What if you called it the Cincinnati curve? I like Cincinnati exit better.
Yeah, yeah, I do, too. I think I like that. You know what to stop that? Spike strips. You know? Or some like a real abrupt curb, you know, like for the, and I know you can't do that though, but if there was like a physical penalty that they paid, you know, when they went over that, like for, you know, it would damage your vehicle, a lot less people would do that.
It's just so weird thinking of that as a norm.
But you know what? I guess there's always going to be a place though, ahead of that exit where, you know, like it's your last second to get in on that exit, and there's somebody who's always going to be diving for that. So no matter what you do in that, what do they call it, the place in between, is it called the gore, I think, where, you know, the two lanes kind of separate there.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so like
yeah.
The triangle piece of material that's left there on the interstate, like that's called the gore, I think. And if you were to, you know, in some way make a curb or a wall or whatever in that area, people, again, are just going to assume that they've got, you know, they're going to back the point where they want to enter that ramp up another 100 feet or whatever you extend it to. So it's always going to happen. You know, someone's always going to be in that last minute position to dive in front of you. But man, that's very frequent. To every exit. That's unbelievable.
Every exit.
Wow.
30 miles.
Makes you want to stay away from Cincinnati, doesn't it? I mean, at least on the highway. I like Cincinnati.
This podcast is brought to you by the Cincinnati Tourism Board.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, I've actually gone through Cincinnati and stopped there many times. Kings Island is in Cincinnati, or it's near Cincinnati. You ever been to Kings Island?
I have not.
It's an incredible park.
Isn't Kings Island more a state of mind?
Maybe.
That's just what I say when I haven't been somewhere.
That's a Jimmy Buffett song.
Kings Island is a state of mind?
I think it is, yeah.
That sounds like something he would write. Is there any food-related verse in there?
No, I don't think so. It does sound like a... Okay, anyways.
Moving on.
Moving on. And you know what? I'm going to... remember I said that I have one that here that I wanted to save some time for? So
yeah.
I'm going to go through this next one quickly. And this one, the one that I'm about to bring up is probably better off, you know, people reading this at home and kind of grasping what's going on here. It's not a happy story, Ben. I'll tell you that up front. It's something that happened in the neck of the woods where I lived in Michigan, where right around there, my mom still lives there. It's in the same township, in Bloomfield Township on Square Lake Road. A horrific accident happened not long ago. This is the beginning of March. Killed a mother of three. It was not even late. I think it was around 9 p.m. when this happened. It was a two-car wreck. She was traveling on Square Lake Road at a speed of about 54 miles per hour. The driver of a Maserati Ghibli, you know, so the I think it's like the lowest end Maserati that you can get, you know, but it's still a Maserati.
Right.
Was traveling on the same road at, get this, Ben, 144 miles an hour when he rear-ended her car.
144.
He was going 144 miles an hour, rear-ends the car of this woman who's traveling at 54 miles an hour. It kills her. He lives. His car's on fire. You know, it just destroys her car, of course. Just sad situation. I mean, a mother of three killed. This guy, of course, he had been out drinking that night. He had just been turned down by his fiancée. He had taken a ring over to her house and, you know, proposed, and she turned him down because I think they were broken up. But there's some weird story that goes along with this whole thing.
Yeah.
There's so many strange details. This guy gets out of the car, and is laughing as he's walking around his burning car, and he's worried about, like, where his cell phone is and stuff like that. He was acting really in a bizarre manner.
Oh, wow.
But, and here, the, you know, this poor woman, he's just killed, you know, and going, but at the speed, 144 miles an hour, and lived. I've never heard of this happening. I was wondering if, you know, it's one of those situations where, because he was drunk, he was, you know, limp, you know, loose, limber, I guess, you know, they didn't tense up at that moment. And the reason, the way that they pieced all this together, you know, the whole event of the evening is like, you know, one through cell phone service, because he was on the phone when it happened. So he's talking to his ex-girlfriend, and he's listing off the speeds that he's going, like he's taunting her, like, well, we'll see how this evening goes. I'm going 90, 100, 110, 120, and he's counting up. And then he dropped his phone when he got to about 150, and that's when this accident happened. And they recreated this also with the black box recorder that's in the Maserati. So they know that his impact was happened at 144 miles per hour. And when you look at the car, I mean, the Maserati, the damage doesn't look like what it should for 144 miles an hour. Now, I know that the other car was traveling at 54, so
the rim's not even bent on that front right tire.
It's amazing. I don't know how he survived this wreck. It's incredible. So, again, there's a lot of details that I'm missing here in the story that, you know, they're in the story. I just don't have time to really, you know, bring the whole thing to you. But what a bizarre tale and tragic, of course, but I just have never heard of anything like that. So that's a 90 mile per hour closure rate on this vehicle. That again, I just don't understand how this happened. The physics behind this are just beyond me, really.
Yeah.
Never heard of anything like that at that high speed. Okay. Do you have one more thing, or do you want me to jump right into my?
I think we should jump right in.
Okay. Now, I teased this early on. Sorry, I've been doing a lot of talking in this podcast. Hope you've been able to get across what you wanted to, Ben.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hope so. Anyways, this is something that I hope I didn't oversell this one, because I would bet that a lot of our listeners have never heard of this. But did you know that in 1929, the entire Los Angeles Auto Show went up in flames? The entire thing.
I was not aware.
Burned every vehicle on the lot. Now, this is back in the day when they would hold the LA Auto Show in tents. Now, I'm going to show you some photos, and our listeners can go online and look up photos of this. If you look up 1929 Los Angeles Auto Show, you will find some photographs. And, Ben, I'm going to show you this. The top photo there is the tents that these things were held in. Now, if you can picture this, they were like the old circus tents of, you know, long ago.
That were multiple stories high.
Enormous tents. I mean, just huge tents. And there are four of them in a row. And they've got this big grand entrance that looks like more of a permanent thing that was built there, but it's not. It's temporary, where it says, you know, auto show or something like that.
Welcome to the blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. But there were 300 cars on display. You know, of course, all the manufacturers had their product there. Again, it's 1929, right before the Depression. And some remarkable vehicles there. I don't have a list of exactly, you know, the specialty vehicles that were there. But there were some, I remember, some that had some history already at that point even. You know, the early cars. But what happened, or at least what they thought had happened, was that somebody, I think they thought initially that someone who was smoking a cigarette and had ignited this fire. Later it was reported, because that's one of the initial reports, later it was reported that it was an electrical short that happened in an area of the tent that was for a manufacturer called Monocoupe. Now, that is a builder of something called the Mono Aircraft out of Moline, Indiana, or Illinois, rather. So how strange is that, too, that they've got an aircraft manufacturer there on site? But so this electrical short or whatever was blamed for it. Now, you can imagine how quickly a tent like that probably went up in smoke or up in flames.
Mm-hmm.
There are photographs. The one below it there is afterwards with all, you know, lines of burned out cars. Every car was completely lost. They didn't get anything out. But the good news is no one died during this fire. There were something like, this will give you an idea of the size of the tents, too. 2,500 people were inside at the time when this happened,
That's
when this
insane.
Ignited. And they all got out without panic. They all were able to find an exit and get out. But if you look at the photographs of, you know, where this or what happened after this, you know, the crowds gathered all around the thing. Of course, it's still smoldering, and you can see just row after row after row of burned out cars from that era. You know, they were brand new in 1929. You would think that, you know, that would be it. That'd be the end of the show. Nothing else would happen, right? It's a disaster. And by the way, you know, relatively you know, it's a lesser known thing. Not a lot of people have heard of this. I would bet that most of our audience had never heard of this until just now. I didn't know that it had happened until I came across it in like a This Day in History type thing. Because it happened on March 5th in 1929. So, you know, it's a recent news item. The very next day, this is how they bounced back. The very next day, they opened the LA Auto Show down at a place called the Shrine Auditorium Expo Hall. And take a look at this, Ben. I'm showing you a photo of the March 6th Shrine Exhibition.
Whoa.
To me, that's a better
fancy
choice.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful place. It's got chandeliers hanging from, you know, looks like three stories up. There are cars on multiple levels. It's, you know, what do they call that when they have, like, the velvet on the balconies, you know, of the place? There's a term for that. I'm probably going to...
Bunting?
Yeah, maybe bunting. That might be it. But it's kind of an overdone type thing. It's a very Victorian look almost for this
it's
hall.
It's opulent.
It's very – that's a perfect word, Ben. It's very opulent the way that they that set this up. And by the way, just one day later. So what a comeback. But again, there's some fascinating photos from this 1929 Los Angeles Auto Show. And if you look online, you can find some extremely high-res photographs where you can zoom in and – I mean, you can get incredible detail on some of these. A lot of them were just towed next door. There was a this is just coincidence. Right next door, behind a barrier wall, there's a place called A1 Auto Works, and they were kind of an automotive salvage place. And so they tore down a fence that was between where the tents were and the salvage place was, and they just drug them across the lot over into the salvage lot, and that was it. They're just done. There's photos of, you know, people standing around evaluating and, you know, figuring out what they've lost in there. I'm sure a lot of manufacturers were there. It probably spelled, you know, doomsday for a lot of these early on manufacturers. You know, if that's their entire product right there. It's like they were trying to sell their one and only car at this show, and now it's gone, their prototype.
We have to remember that in these days, just like the early days of soda, there were many more competitors in the field. So...
Literally thousands,
and many of these were very, very small, almost cottage-level operations. Mm-hmm. You know, they might have had one or two cars to show off, and that may have been the extent of their production. They doubled down because they were hoping to close some deals.
Yeah, now can you imagine if you had lost everything in this L.A. Auto Show fire? I mean, just horrible luck for that to happen to some people. Now, the bigger manufacturers, of course, a little more resilient. They were able to send new product almost immediately when they heard what happened, and that's why they were able to open the show on the following day, on March 6th of 1929 at the Shrine Auditorium. But, again, these photographs are definitely worth looking at, and it's 88 years ago, so anybody that was around at that time would have been very, very young to see this actually happen. So the people that, you know, probably have the most interesting stories about it, you know, the older folks that were there, you know, working or, you know, were in attendance of the show, you know, that were, you know, I guess old enough to remember what had happened, probably gone. But there's still some decent write-ups about it. There's not a lot of information, but there's a few photographs and just an interesting bit of history, I thought, that, you know, I had never realized this had happened until just this week.
It's crazy, man.
That's crazy.
It's insane. I didn't know about this either, just the scale of the tragedy. But I guess it's a catastrophe that did not become a tragedy because everyone was okay.
It was a mechanical catastrophe, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Mechanical tragedy. Crazy insane.
It also insane crazy. It also makes me wonder how on earth board track racers didn't come away with more grievous injuries. You know? Check out our episode on board track racing.
Yeah, there's a lot of head scratchers, I guess, from that era. You know, like, what were they thinking? I guess that's just the way you did it, though. I mean, it's good enough for the circus. Nothing's really gone wrong there yet, right? No, I don't know. What year was that? 1929? There had to have been some circus tragedies at that point.
Oh, sure.
Circus tents, it seemed like they were always catching on fire.
Or an elephant was going insane due to mistreatment or something.
Yeah, rogue elephants all over the place.
Rogue elephants.
Yeah. Not the case here, and they blamed it on an electrical short, but just glad everybody got out. All 2,500 people with no panic.
Conspiracy theory. What if it was a rogue elephant? It was just covered up by Big Circus.
Yeah, Big Circus, yeah. It says.
Well, at that point, we talk about our conspiracy theories concerning arson enthusiast elephants. that sounds like the point where we should sew up the show. So we want to thank you very much, Josh, Rob, Bill, Gary, Mike, Richard, Michael, everybody else who wrote in. We never get done with everything in these episodes, but we will be back. In the meantime, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram, and now Amazon.
That's right. We've got our Road Rally video, right? So you can check that out. If you have a Prime subscription, you can watch it for free. If you don't have an Amazon Prime subscription, you can still watch it for free, but you have to watch it with commercials. That's the only caveat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still worth watching, in my opinion. Yeah, in my opinion, it is.
None of those commercials are from the Cincinnati Tourism Board.
Yeah.
I don't know. We can't really say that. They might be.
I would think Rob would still want you to watch this, too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. So this concludes our episode, but not our show entire. We will be back the very next week. In the meantime, if you'd like to hear more car stuff, you can check out every single audio podcast we've ever done on our website, carstuffshow.com, and they are free.
Also free.
Also free. And most importantly, some of the best suggestions and topics come from listeners just like you. So if you would like to write to us with some thoughts on anything your fellow listeners said today, any of the speculation surrounding bridge collapses, or if you have an idea for an upcoming topic you'd like to hear us cover in the future, you can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.